Into the Fold is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world. Brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin, the opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and guests and not of the University of Texas at Austin. Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, the mental health podcast. I am your host, Ike Evans, and today we are delighted to bring you episode 144, Teaching in a Time of Division. But first, some mental health headlines. In Hogg News, the Hogg Foundation invites eligible doctoral students from the University of Texas at Austin to submit a proposal for the 2023 Moore Fellowship. Candidates should have a primary research interest in the mental health impact of crises, stress, and adversity. Proposals related to COVID-19 are also eligible and encouraged. The submission deadline is March 22, 2023. For information on how to apply, go to the funding opportunities section of our main website, hogg.utexas.edu. In other news, a recent CDC survey found that teens, and especially girls, are experiencing more violence, suicidal thoughts, and mental health challenges. This is according to a recent story by CNN. Teen girls are experiencing record high levels of violence, depression, and suicide risk in recent years, keeping with a trend of declining youth health and well-being overall. This is based on responses to the CDC's biannual Youth Risk Behavior Survey that was conducted in the fall of 2021, which tries to assess youth well-being since the COVID-19 pandemic. Kathleen Ethier, director of the CDC's Division of Adolescent and School Health, is quoted as saying, quote, "Many measures were moving in the wrong direction before the pandemic. These data show the mental health crisis among young people continues." And finally, the Hogg Foundation is continuing its showcase of the New Voices Showcase for Youth. Last fall, young people submitted short videos that try to answer the question, how would the world be different if it cared about your mental health? Six of the video submissions were of such quality and originality as to earn their creators small grant awards. The most recent of these is a short, untitled video by Joshua Stiles of Austin. If I had to describe it, I'd say it's a short, moving slice of life by a young black man who's looking for his own answer to the question, how would the world be different if it cared about your mental health? You can find a link to it in the show notes for this episode. The remaining four videos will be published on our blog in the coming weeks. And that does it for Mental Health Headlines. Don't be left out of the loop. Become a Hogg Insider by subscribing to Mental Health Headlines. You can find a sign-up link on our main website at hogg.utexas.edu. The state of Florida is at the epicenter of a growing controversy over the control of schools and what they're allowed to teach. Spurred by Governor Ron DeSantis, the Florida Department of Education has imposed a host of new restrictions on books in public schools. This extends to both classrooms and libraries. The restrictions focus on books that teach about race, sexual orientation, and gender identity. The new rules have created upheaval, with some teachers even packing up their classroom libraries, covering their shelves with construction paper to avoid the threat of felony prosecution. In Texas, there are signs that some lawmakers are trying to make similar things happen. As of this recording, bills have been filed that would ban classroom instruction about sexual orientation and gender identity in Texas public schools before certain grade levels. Public teaching has never been easy, but the willingness of some lawmakers to crack down on what is taught is unprecedented in recent memory. To help us understand what teachers are going through, we have brought on Nelva Williamson, a classroom teacher for Houston ISD, and Jesus Sosa of Richardson ISD. Jesus teaches social studies for grades 9 through 12, and Nelva teaches AP African American Studies for grades 10th through 12th. at the Young Women's College Preparatory Academy in Houston. Nelva and Jesus, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
So our listeners would love to know more about you and your journeys as teachers. Jesus, why don't we start with you?
This is my third year teaching, and I didn't go to college to become a teacher initially. I wanted to be a lawyer and went the political science route, and then got my master's. And after adjuncting for a little bit, I realized, you know what, corporate world might be better. Went over there and I didn't really like it. So I did alternative certification in the middle of the pandemic and came back and started teaching at Richardson for ESL World Geography. And since then, I've expanded to now teaching Mexican American Studies and really helping the district develop lessons.
Okay, and Nelva?
Well, I have been a classroom teacher for the past 42 years. This is my 42nd year in Houston ISD, and I did go to college to become a teacher, graduating from Texas A&M with a degree in EDCI, Education, Curriculum, and Instruction, with a concentration in history and in theater. I have been, you know, wanting to be a teacher like my entire life. My mom was a teacher. My great-grandfather helped to found a HBCU in Sumter, South Carolina. So you might say that education is in my blood. I currently do teach the pilot one-year program of AP African American Studies, as well as AP US History and AP World History. So I'm like the AP history teacher for history at my campus, which is a small campus.
Okay, so Jesus, there have been at least a couple of bills that have been filed that would ban classroom instruction about sexual orientation and gender identity in Texas public schools. What is your sense of what is happening around the state on this, and how have you been affected?
It's very unfortunate that they're having to find ways to scare certain demographics who normally, you know, wouldn't go out and vote into going out to vote. You know, and it's the parties that are typically going after, you know, the LGBTQ plus youth have had other ways to get the votes out, you know, whether it's abortion, whether it's, you know, immigration or this or whatever. But since they've had a lot of wins in the Supreme Court in recent years, you know, they're, me personally, I believe they're running out of things that they can scare people on. And, you know, making the case seem to be like, oh, these teachers, and that's the word I hear a lot, indoctrination, you know, that they're indoctrinating our kids into believing certain things. That's probably the most damaging thing they can do rather than trying to help. I know for my students, I never ask them to share anything that they wouldn't want to share publicly. And I know, you know, I can't confirm, but I know a lot of them, you know, fall somewhere on the LGBTQ plus spectrum. Some of them have told me that they are. And for them, they like going into my classroom because they see representation. You know, they see the rainbow flag and they'll see, you know, love is love. And I've always been a strong advocate of mental health and for my students, because I grew up not knowing what anxiety was, not knowing what, you know, whether these things were normal or not. So I just want to make sure, you know, I'm not there to teach them anything that they don't already know. I'm just there to, you know, show them that I love them and I support them. But it does get tiring. And, you know, most recently for me, I had a student who's not even one of my students complain about the rainbow flag. So that was a conversation with HR about needing to relocate it. And I did make the case, you know, I understand that there's a student who doesn't appreciate it, but at the same time, I have over a dozen letters from my students telling me, thank you. You know, I feel loved in your classroom. I feel seen. I feel heard. So if it's happening on such a small level, you know, within the students, I'm sure that seeing it on a state level or city level, like a lot of the cities here in Texas are doing, just must be really hard on them. So this is why, again, this is, it shouldn't be an issue, but it's unfortunate that they picked such a vulnerable demographic to go after.
Okay. And so what impact would you say, this is having on your mental health or that of your fellow teachers?
It's definitely exhausting, because I believe it was sometime last year, sometime within the past few months, when Greg Abbott, you know, told the, or Governor Abbott told, the agencies in Texas, you know, anybody who was a doctor, a teacher, public servant had to report anybody who was transgender youth to child abuse, you know, and there's, you know, the system's already overloaded as it is when it comes to child abuse. And the parents who are typically supportive of their trans kids, those are not as abundant as one would imagine. So seeing the governor, you know, essentially trying to turn teachers and public servants into the boogeyman, you know, essentially trying to get us to tell them, hey, you know, this kid has supportive parents. That's how I view it. You know, hey, my kid, you know, because kids know from a young age what their gender is, because it's not the same as biological sex. But a lot of people, unfortunately, it's just, you know, not being well informed enough on the thing, on the issues, you know, like the difference between this and that. And they just, I don't know, one word to summarize all of this would be just, it's exhausting, you know, trying to keep up with what are they trying to do now, you know, or what are they trying to get us to do, to essentially trying to make us scare our kids into going back into the closet.
Okay, so Nelva, you teach AP African American History, like I said. So what is the situation there in Houston, and what are you looking out for?
Well, in Houston, and because Houston is a very diverse city, I have not had really anyone come up against the fact that I am teaching AP African American Studies. My campus is a majority minority campus. The parents are very supportive of the program, as is the administration. So I'm not coming up against any anything directly. The one thing that kind of has me looking is, of course, what the state legislature might do in regards to following other states that are, you know, trying to censor history or censor history even more than what they did in the last legislative session.
Okay. So, and, you know, I think instead of, as I think it's become increasingly the case, we hear about, you know, things like African-American studies from politicians, you know, or even, you know, high level bureaucrats. But, you know, I think our listeners would love to hear directly from a teacher, like what it is that your students respond to in the material that you teach.
Well, that could be a very long answer, but I will make it brief. Yes, my students are really responding well to the material. It is the first time that many of them are having an opportunity to take a deeper dive into African-American history and culture, the traditions of the Black community, and it is really resonating with them. We started in Africa and learned about the West African kingdoms from which most of the enslaved people brought through the Middle Passage were captured from. And that really gave them an understanding that history for Black people does not begin with enslavement, that it begins on the continent of Africa. And I feel that that was something that was really eye-opening for not only the students, but also for their parents. I have found out that parents are following along with the different lessons that I'm covering in class, the different topics that we're reading. It has been really refreshing there. And also, in spite of the history that I have to teach about enslavement and how insidious that institution of chattel slavery was in the United States, and also the remnants that we still feel from that system, it has been a great pleasure to teach my students that there was resistance in small ways and large ways from all sides, from men and women. They really, because I teach at an all-girls school, they really did connect to the stories of how women took agency over themselves, to protect their children and their families as they were, even as they were in enslavement. And the idea of the uplift of the Black community, even through enslavement and during Reconstruction, and how freedmen took such great care, I would say, in making sure that the visages of slavery were not a part of their community. And, you know, the beginnings of education through freedmen's bureaus, and then eventually with the development of HBCUs and the NAACP, and the creation of sororities and fraternities and women's clubs, all of those things are part of history that have been neglected. And my students are really, it's just opening up their eyes to all of this. They're like, okay, it's not that we were slaves and then there was Dr. King in the 60s. There was all this history in between. So it has really been refreshing for me. And as I said, eye-opening and uplifting for my students to see themselves in history as a vital part of the creation of this nation.
Okay. Jesus, you mentioned being exhausted. So one question that I have for both of you is, you know, we know that teaching can be stressful, but what things help you to shore up your resilience or help you keep your head up? Let's go in reverse order. Nelva, if you want to take a swing at that first.
Sure. One of the things that I do to just keep myself uplifted and above the fray is I will unplug. There are times when I just don't listen to the news, and I had to do that at the beginning of Black History Month. And I was like, this is my month and I have to unplug. But there was so much backlash from things that people were not understanding about the AP African-American Studies course in particular, that I just had to unplug. I am part of a worldwide group of women who we walk for our health. It's called Girls Trek. And I just had to get outside and walk. I have a little dog, Mr. Bentley, and who I love dearly. He's my little fur baby. And I play with him. I walk him. I just, after school, I just unplug. That time when I might have watched the news or scrolled on social media, I just simply put my phone away and I do other things. And I've also found that I've started reading books that have nothing to do with history, but are fun to read. I'm in a book club as well. Yeah. And so those are ways that I have unplugged. I just have to just dim the noise that's going on all around me and focus on me and keeping myself kind of straight, as we would say.
Okay. Jesus?
Very similar to what Ms. Nelva said. I too have had to cut away from a lot of the, you know, the just the inundated amount of news that I was getting on from every source. You know, it used to be just TV and the newspaper maybe, but you know, since social media, it's like there's news on TikTok, on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. And for me, I know that the algorithm work really well. So I would be getting a lot of the same content, and a lot of times the same content isn't always going to be necessarily positive news. Like during COVID times, you know, I had to do this back then. I just had to stop watching the news so much and just, you know, keep it to a minimum, you know, kind of like just almost headlines. But that's one way that I've been dealing with it. The other one is talking about it with other teachers, because we're all in the same boat. And for the most part, most teachers, you know, we don't really talk about each other's political views, at least in my school. But when it comes to do with the kids, we're all pretty much on the same page. You know, we're there to teach the kids. nobody goes into the profession thinking, oh, I'm going to, you know, this is how I'm going to become, you know, a moneymaker genius or something like that. We do it because we do care about these kids. And as hard as it is sometimes, you know, sometimes it's worth it. Then the last thing I do is once I get home, I have to make time for myself because I'm working and then I'm also working on my doctorate. And I'm like, I have to find some time to just unwind, you know, to relax, to, you know, even if it's just taking a 3-hour nap, those things do help. And it just, you know, it's funny how the body just sometimes just needs a nap to completely revitalize itself. But it, you know, making time for yourself, unplugging and talking with others really does help a lot with this.
Whenever the subject of classroom censorship comes up, parents and teachers are often presented as antagonists. You know, a teacher does or says something in class that a parent finds out about it, who then complains. And in this charged climate, you know, you never know, any one incident can find itself in the news. But that's not the whole story, I suspect. And so how would you characterize the level of support that you get from parents about your concerns? Jesus, why don't we start with you?
So for me, I've been very lucky to have very supportive parents. I don't know if it's just, you know, I don't know if it's like this across the board or not, but at least for my school, majority of the parents that reach out to me are the ones that are concerned. You know, they're like, hey, how's my kid doing? Whether they're doing good or bad, they just want to check up. You know, I'm very lucky to have a small group of parents who offered a chaperone on field trips, who offered to, you know, they told me, hey, if there's some kids who can't afford, you know, the ticket fee, let me know and I'll see if I can help out. So for me personally, it's been very supportive. I've only, in my 3 years that I've been teaching there, I've only had two complaints. One, you know, the recent one was about the pride flag, which wasn't even one of my students. In talking to my superiors, you know, they were telling me, well, they're like, it makes sense that it's not one of your kids because you do build really good relationships with your kids. You know, I have kids who are not, you know, in the Latino community, homophobia is still very much a real thing. And I get a lot of kids who are new arrivals here from Central America, Latin America, and I'm able to talk to them, you know, and tell them, hey, you know, I know this is the way things were done, you know, back home, but here in your new home, you know, this is not okay. And talking to them makes them understand. The other one complaint that I had was my first year teaching. We were talking about the Middle East, and I don't even remember the exact conversation, but it had something to do. I brought up the fact that President Trump was being accused of putting kids in cages. And I said, you know, the world community right now is not looking, it's not looking good for us. Well, I had a kid, one of my own students, who went and complained to mom and dad and said, hey, you know, Mr. Sosa's telling the class that President Trump's putting kids in cages. Thankfully, though, my principals were very supportive and they said, look, you know, one of the kids brought up the question. It wasn't Mr. Sosa just trying to, you know, talk about it. It's actually part of the conversation that just sprung up naturally. Which right now I think there's already one in place, but you know, the conversation in Texas is gearing towards, you know, don't let teachers talk about public events. Current events, because, you know, that could lead to a lot of uncomfortable conversations for some people, you know, talking about gay issues, talking about Black Lives Matter, talking about, you know, women's empowerment. All of these things is seen as a threat to everything they know and love. So they try, this is how they're trying to censor teachers, you know, just stick to the facts. But at the same time, you know, I remember when I was in high school, the debate was teachers are trying to teach kids about evolution, which has now just moved on to, you know, they picked a new boogeyman and now they're going after, books, which if you go and ask most librarians, they'll tell you, you know, if you're trying to ban books, you know, that's definitely not a good thing for you to be doing right now.
And Nelva?
Well, at my current school, I have not had any type of pushback. As I said, it's a majority minority campus. The parents have been very supportive of what I'm teaching in history, although, as Jesus has brought up, I am mindful, not that I'm trying to be cautious, but I am mindful about how I talk about maybe more conservative things that might not be comfortable for me, as I'm a little bit more liberal. But, you know, I kind of temper how I talk about that so that no one could say, oh, well, she's to the left and she's a liberal, or she's to the right and she's conservative. She doesn't like this person because of their views. I try to kind of keep it real mild. But that, again, can be a stressor, because it's like, you know, I still have to tell the truth, and I'm not trying to sugarcoat anything. I show the students where I'm getting my information from, and it's not from just social media. But at this particular point in time, there has not been an instance, but all teachers do, we just wait for that time, that one time where you might say something that is very benign and someone takes it in a different way. It could be, like Jesus said, a student outside the hallway who might not be privy, or who is not privy to the entire conversation or what the lesson of the day is in your classroom, but then they go and say something. But at this point in time, I have not had to deal with that.
Well, yeah, and you know, it's very much a mixed bag, and we don't want to give listeners the sense that, you know, that the mood is entirely one of dread or anxiousness. I mean, you know, setting aside everything else, you know, I mean, teaching is still your calling, and it still provides, you know, endless moments of uplift, getting through to young minds. And nothing that has happened in recent months can rob you of that, it sounds like I'm hearing. My last question, and this is for both of you, is that for those setting policy on this issue, what message do you have for them? Or what do you want them to know about your reality as an educator? Neville, let's start with you.
Well, the first thing that I would tell anyone setting policy is to listen to the teachers. Yes, listening to parents is just as important, but listen to the people who are in the classroom. Listen to the people who are in the school, because what the parent might be getting is totally out of context and in a vacuum. And if they have certain political leanings, they might take it one way or the other. So my caution to policymakers is to listen to teachers. I know that we are a much maligned group for whatever reason. I know at one point in time in the history of this country, teachers were looked up to and supported and very much respected by policymakers. And I'm not sure when the change began, but it would do them well to listen to teachers.
I completely agree with Ms. Williamson about needing to listen to teachers. During COVID, I remember when teachers were very highly looked up to for a little bit. And this is not, you know, I'm not saying that everybody should be like, oh, thank God we have teachers for this. I mean, right now, I don't think politicians realize how difficult it is to get a substitute teacher. Like in my own, you know, school, if somebody's out last minute, and, you know, a lot of times you can't control having a cold or a flu or a sick child or something like that. So if you're sick, you're going to have to put in for a sub, and the subs are not always there. There's a shortage of subs. You know, they're not being paid the same amount across the board. Same thing with teachers. You know, you got some districts that are really good at paying teachers, and then you got some that are trying to cut back, you know, going down to a 4-day school week. And I don't think all of these decisions are coming from teachers themselves, because even, you know, with the big controversy going around Greg Abbott's State of the State address this past week, I took that almost as if he's coming after teachers, public school teachers, you know, and if they're not careful, they're going to turn this into a job that's, you know, underpaid, overworked. And a lot of people are going to be like, why am I dealing with the stress of it? You know, when I could be making a whole lot more money doing something else. So my advice to them would be just, you know, listen to us, listen to the students. The students are going to be, I mean, by the time they're 14, they're old enough to understand, you know, that, you know, there's gay people in the world. There's trans people. They understand that, you know, the world is not perfect. You know, Black people, people of color, women, there's a lot of groups. That doesn't mean that talking about them is still going to be, you know, playing the victim. It just means learning the history. Otherwise, you know, you're going to repeat it again. And so these kids are smart. Listen to the teachers, listen to the students, and just make sure that you're careful, because otherwise you're going to turn a lot of good teachers away retiring early.
Well, okay. This was a wonderful dialogue. Jesus, Nelva, you take care of yourselves. I'm a product of public schools. So, you know, this hits close to home to me, for me as well. All right. Well, thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
This
Evans.
Was fun. Okay.
Right. Nice meeting y'all.
All right. Nice meeting all of you too.
At time of recording, it is still February, which, as I'm sure you know, is Black History Month. This podcast has offered up a lot over the years pertaining to Black history, including even our previous episode titled Black History, the Hogg Foundation, and the Red Scare in Texas. You will find links galore in the show notes for today's episode, so please check those out. And that does it for this episode. We're glad you could join us. Special thanks, as always, to my colleagues, Kate Rooney, Daryl Wiggins, and Anna Harris, for their production assistance. Thank you as well to the Hogg Foundation for their steadfast support. Just as taking care of ourselves enhances our ability to help others, so it is as well that by helping others, we enhance our own resilience. Leave us a review, subscribe to us on the podcast app of your choice. You can find us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, or TuneIn, among others. Taking us out now is Anna's Good Vibes. Thanks for joining us.